This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's a Monday. It's just gone 11 o'clock. And you know what that means? It's time to say a very good morning to the wonderful Mr. Brendan Devenny, presenter of the DL Debate. Brendan, good morning.
Thank you, Dole.
Brendan, it struck me actually this morning that there was a bunch of 30 or so lads on a panel that brought this county to wonderful places over the past couple of months and gave great pride and a great lift to Donegal. But there's an argument that says this weekend just gone, they've gone back to their natural environment, which is kicking seven shades of how's your father out of each other for their clubs, for their parishes. You know, for many, the county is a huge honour, but I suspect for many GAA players, where it's really at and where their commitment really lies is with the parish and with the club.
Yeah, I suppose we're kind of unique in some ways in that. Don't you look at different sports there in terms of having that, you know, push up to the county. It's where everybody wants to play, and it's where I suppose we've been on a unbelievable journey this year. Listen, a bit disappointed in the final, of course, and it's taken a lot of people a while to get over that. But I suppose for the lads to get back at it, you know, when you're used to, I think, being in that level of fitness environment, and obviously you would have had the blowout, then them lads have been glad to get back. Now, there was a few of them still away at holidays and doing different things. There was quite a few of the county players that didn't play at the weekend. They're still away. But listen, the club championship, the way it's set up, will allow for that, yeah, in terms of, you know, you can maybe take an odd defeat in there. But listen, very quickly, you got to get your act together, and teams need their players back.
It was an interesting weekend. A lot of focus on the fact that both St. Eunan's and Niffconnell were beaten in their games. Now, I mean, in fairness, they were beaten by Kilcar and Lenswilly, who aren't exactly like, you know, C teams themselves. I mean, Kilcar and Lenswilly, both great clubs with great histories and, yeah, and great traditions.
Yeah, listen, I suppose there are different aspects that I think Lenswilly have, you know, Gary McDade has them well organised, and it's that first game scenario as well. You know, you're at home, you know, big passionate crowd out there. They raced into a huge lead, don't, and in a lot of games at the weekend, there was big leads put up where games looked out of sight, as we keep seeing the new rules. That's not the case, because Niffconnell, in fairness, come back in. It was a two-pointer, kicked that off, and they were 9 up with 10 to go, Lenswilly. Only winning by a point, and the same at the Bridge, you know, where McCool's had put on a great performance. The game was out of sight, and next thing, 2 two-pointers and a goal. A couple of them coming from Carlos O'Reilly brought them right back within a kick of the ball. And even yesterday, you know, Kilcare went 11-3 up at the start of the second half. Donald, you're watching that. That's game over.
Yeah.
But of course, there you go. Eunan started to hit a couple of two-pointers, and they had played really poorly. And again, going back to county players, all the county players were missing from St. Eunan's. They had a couple of injuries as well. Yeah. And I know, even from St. Michael's side, Ryan McHugh didn't play, like, say, Jack Higgery and Matthew McLean and these boys. The Kilcare weren't at full strength either, but certainly St. Eunan's probably missing 8, maybe, yeah, 9 starters. So it probably wasn't the outcome most people would have. St. Eunan's were odds on favourites to win it, because Kilcare had a very poor league. Listen, they lost the first 7 games, though.
Yeah.
So, listen, working off a small squad seemed to really affect them, but then they got their act together. They drew the next game, they won the next 4, and stayed up in the division. So they came in with a bit of form into this game, and this was a big victory and a good start for them.
And this is what Kilcare needed, because, I mean, a team like that maybe has had a bad run of form, it needs to go into the championship with a bit of a boost, and they've certainly got it. Now, you can never read too much, and as you said, there are a lot of teams missing players following the county campaign and other reasons. But, you know, you can't base too much on the first games of the championship. There's a long road ahead, but, I mean, it certainly throws up some interesting fixtures into the future.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose when you look at it as well, you know, Mark Sweeney took over there. He actually played last year out in the park. He came on sub against us. So he was kind of thrown in at the deep end a wee bit with the management team. Kieran McGinley and Michael Cunningham came in with them as well. So, you know, they kept it local. You know, you're seeing some clubs there doing with a bit, I suppose, financial muscle, going out there and taking in, you know, almost like county-like setups, and you think, right, is that fair club level? It isn't really. You know, it's good to promote within. I think you should always, the club should be in charge, have their own people in charge, and I suppose they went and took up the job. But yeah, for Eunan's, I suppose, you know, straight away now, they're away to Eirua next week. So if you lose that first game, though, a bit of pressure's coming on. You want to kind of finish up the top and avoid that prelim quarter final. So if you've lost one already, that's going to be a struggle. But I still think St. Eunan's and Niffconnell will rebound from this, you know. And listen, Lenswilly just showing, even without Michael Murphy, that they're a force.
So a couple of very interesting games to come in the weeks ahead. And as ever, the Donegal County Championship is going to throw up some stories, and it's started already.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose when people are looking at the format, and I think when that game started yesterday, it didn't seem like a championship match. And I was just chatting to Enda McGinley, like, the Tyrone Championship's not starting until the 11th of September. I mean, it seems so crazy that it's far away, but they took a complete break. Like, yeah. Their league didn't start to May. But what happens in a Tyrone is the league games actually are very well supported, because they're almost like pre-championship. We play these long league games and they're drawn out, and there's not much talk about them. Nobody really cares that much about it. I know for some of the teams, don't get me wrong, say for the likes of Neve Patrick Muff, they played in Division 2 last year and it gave them a great bed and got into the Junior Championship, and they ended up in the All-Ireland Final. Mm-hmm. So there's different teams coming up the leagues, but the league is important to get that kind of tough bedding for championship, let's say. But for the top teams, the league doesn't really matter that much. So, you know, when that game started yesterday, it's like, right, this isn't a championship match. We didn't see any of the fire or the tackles we'd like to see because of its nature, the way it's set up. Now, I suppose, don't you look at that many ways from our championship and just chat at the end of theirs is knockout straight away, which yeah. I think is a bit crazy. Like, you're waiting for a championship game all year and you're gone in a match. Mm. Like, our old format of the home and away, you'd home gate each, and then if you ended up in a third game, which was a big game then in a neutral, and then it was quarter semi-final. I still think that's the best format, yeah. Because once you draw out championship, you kind of lose what championship is. There needs to be something matters, and in that, you know, if you lose your away game, you've got this home game then, and then it's back to the wall, and then you're into that third game. So every game matters, and I think to me that's the best way to do the championship.
Right, let's talk about tonight's DL debate, because obviously all the matches played at the weekend will be mentioned. There'll be a lot of focus, obviously, on the unions and Naomh Connell games and the aftermath of those. But I mean, you know, there's a hell of a lot of games took place over the weekend, and your columnists, you've got Ciara Kane, you've got Brendan Kilcoyne, and the ever-dependable Ryan Ferry.
Yeah, indeed. Listen, great man, they sum it all up, and you know, again, we're still, I suppose, I was thinking about questions they asked Ciara, and I'd still like to get his point of view on the final. Of course, it was a bank holiday last week, so I'm just like, there's so many people talking to me about it out there. So listen, just talking to Ciara about the split season and the different championships, because Ulster is so different. I say, when you look at our championship, our format, the Tyrone's, you know, it's night and day, but theirs is the most interesting championship. It's the one that the whole Ulster looks to, because it's just knockout. Now, again, going back, as I say, and I think, and even Enda was saying, he would prefer that home and away early on in terms of the early starts of the championship. But Cahar's a great man to run his eye across Ulster. And of course, Ryan Ferry and Brendan, great. You know, we'll look across all championships. And I just mentioned, you know, we have to mention, of course, Neve Patrick there up the intermediate. They had a last minute goal, Cormac McColgan, to beat Bundoran in their first intermediate game. So a lot of stuff happening across the intermediate and junior. There was ladies, there was everything happening at the weekend there. So listen, we'll pull it all together this evening.
And as you said, maybe a final analysis of the All-Ireland final. And maybe no harm to do it now, 2 weeks later. Maybe we've all, the emotions have settled a bit. Maybe you've looked back on it with a little bit more, how can one put this, not, I won't say objectivity, but not as emotionally as you were looking at it, you know, 5 minutes after it happened.
I'm going to use that tonight to Ciara. Can you use some objectivity now, Ciara, my friend, and tell me what you think? But do you know what is there, Donal? Yeah. I do like getting people from outside looking at what you call a neutral, technically, just to give it to you straight. What did you think of this, you know, in terms of what happened on the day? Because none of us expected what happened. And I know people can talk about hindsight and different things and that now, but certainly Ciara's a good boy to break down games, so I'll enjoy talking to him this evening, because all you can do from this now, Donal, is learn from it and build again and look at what went right in the season and look at what went wrong. And so many things went right. But certainly we made Kerry look like world beaters, I think, in that final. And there certainly isn't that gap between us.
Well, that'll be on the DL debate tonight. It's on after the 7 o'clock news on Highland Radio tonight. And then we'll, of course, be podcast on highlandradio.com. But for now, Brendan Devaney, thank you very much.
Thank you, Donal.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Later on this week, Letterkenny will become a colourful, vibrant town as we celebrate Pride 2025. And I'm delighted to say I am joined in studio by two of the Pride Organising Committee. Owen Brown is PRO and Candice Devine is Head of Community Engagement. And you're both very welcome indeed.
Thanks for having us, Donal.
Cam, it's going to go to yourself first, because Pride, it's the, is it third or fourth?
It's this weekend.
Oh, it's the third year.
And in fairness to say, that this is the biggest yet, judging by the lineup, it seems to be the biggest by a long shot. But I mean, it's really growing into something that's become an integral part of the summer calendar in Letterkenny.
Yeah, that was our hope. We started this off in the first year, and we managed to accumulate really good artists that year, but each year we're growing and the momentum's growing, and we're trying to bring a festival essentially to Letterkenny to draw more tourism into the county, and like people are coming from all over, which is great to see.
Now, we have the parade obviously on Saturday, we have the music, but what's interesting this year is there seems to be a lot more emphasis on talks and a very interesting one, Pride Speaks, a night of voices and vision taking place in the RCC on the Friday night. So it's not just music, there's discussion, there's panels as well. And that night of voices and vision, Owen, it's going to be an important element of Pride.
Yes, definitely. I think especially from the voices we have speaking at that event, we have Dr. Alva Smith, who was a trailblazer with the Together for Yes and Yes Equality campaigns. We have a councillor, Mickey Murray, who's the first gay, openly gay, Lord Mayor of Belfast. We have councillor Declan Meehan moderating the event. We have Jenny Maguire, who is a very up-and-coming Dublin trans activist. And we also have Brian Sheehan, who is co-chair of the Yes Equality campaign. So it's going to be a great event. We'd encourage attendance at that one, because it's more about, it's more than just the live music and the fun and the colours. It's about talking about the history and how we go forward with it, you know.
And as you say, Councillor Mickey Murray, the first openly gay Lord Mayor of Belfast, now Councillor Declan Meehan, who's moderating that event. I mean, and Declan is also an openly gay man. And
yes.
One of the interesting things I find is the amount that that's not discussed, that Declan Meehan is an openly gay man and no one really seems to talk about it or care very much about it. And really, in one way, that's where you want to be, isn't it?
That is exactly where we want to be. That's the whole reason we put this on. You know, it's for younger, especially younger LGBTQ plus people that feel that there isn't visibility and there isn't, you know, a space for them in the community. And we want to say that there is, and you're here and you're respected. And that is where we want to end up, you know, where it's not spoken about. It's equality for all. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there, definitely, and it's all about the positivity and the love. So we're
and the emphasis here very much is it's looking back at the past, and obviously, as you say, Elvis Smith very much involved in Together for Yes, and there will be reflection on that, and there'll be reflection on where we are. But a very important part of that discussion is going to be looking into the future and where we're going and getting to the point. And it's a point we're getting to. I mean, Leo Varadkar was an openly gay Taoiseach, and quite frankly, any discussion I ever heard about him were about his policies and not about his sexuality.
Exactly.
As it should be.
Yeah, as it should be.
I mean, his ethnicity, his sexuality, that's his own business. His politics, have at it, lads, go for it. And that's where we need to be. That we, you know, if someone is, whether or not they're gay or whether they're heterosexual,
based on merits,
or whether they're bi or whatever,
yes,
the fact is people are doing what they're doing because they're qualified to do what they're doing, not because of any other factor.
Of course, yeah. It should definitely be based on merit. And again, that's why we're doing these events, you know. We want it to be a society where everyone's embraced for their work and not for their ethnicity or for their sexuality. And that's important to mention
our
as well.
Identity.
You know, it's for a whole lot of different things. It's not just about gay people. It's for embracing everyone in society.
Allies as well. It's a massive part of what our celebration coming together. We couldn't do this without allies as well.
And sponsorship. Yeah. You know, we have some amazing sponsors in the town, and we're really looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, and Candice, this is sort of straying into your area as well, because you're head of community engagement, which means that, I mean, this isn't, you know, gay people having a party that nobody else really has anything to do with. This is very much an integral part of the community.
Yeah.
And part of your job is going to the wider community and saying, look, this isn't just about them. This is about us in the widest context possible.
It's literally about joining everybody together and having a celebration, no matter what your identity or sexuality or anything like that is. It's just coming together, showing a united front. It was also, again, one of our fundamental, like, things for starting this was, you don't need to leave Letterkenny or Donegal to be who you are. You can be that here. It's trying to stop people from leaving, to kind of embrace who they really are
and get away from that shame that can be attached to sexuality and identity as well. It's about embracing who you are and not being ashamed about it. And I think having the allies and everyone come together as a community is so powerful. For doing that, you know.
Well, I remember I once had a conversation with someone who every couple of weeks left Letterkenny to go to Belfast for a weekend. Yeah. And they would have hookups and whatever in Belfast, and then they came back. And they felt they had to do that because they couldn't do it here. Yeah. And I also thought there was something really sad about that, that they literally had to travel.
Yeah.
And number one, it was almost negating the chance of a relationship because of the way they were having to do things. And it just seemed a very sort of sad way to feel. You had to live your life in that way, that you had to, this is my day-to-day life in Letterkenny, and this is my other life, and never the twain shall meet. Mm-hmm. When the reality should be, it's your life in all its diverse elements.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to break down.
Yeah.
Obviously, people emigrate all the time. That's just part of life. But we've had the past couple of years so many people write in who used to live in Donegal to, like, write into us and say, like, I left because I couldn't be who I wanted to be. And this is so powerful to see this happening in my own, like, my old community. And, like, it really moved a lot of people.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Firstly, as well, you know, I'm a committee member now, but in 2023, in the first event, I wasn't even sure about going to it. There was still shame I had attached to going to that event. And the power of seeing allies and everyone in the community come together, it moved me and it changed my opinion on the event and what it's about. It's about embracing identity and showing everyone in the community that you can be who you are.
Candice, are you finding doors a little easier to open now in terms of that community engagement when you speak to various, be it potential advertisers, potential sponsors, be it the council, be it even groups in terms of organising events in their premises? Is that door a little easier to push each year?
It is so much easier. The first year I found it was a little bit hesitant, but it actually really surprised me how open people really were. They really wanted to see something kind of come back to Letterkenny because, you know, only in the last few years more things are happening now in the town, and it's great to see. And I find as well, like, we're holding something in the town, but people come from all over the county, all over Ireland. People are flying in from the UK for this.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's bringing business into our local businesses, and that's what we want to do. We want to support the sponsors that are supporting us. It's all about that give and take, and, you know, it does make that feeling of, like, united, and that's, like, the most powerful thing now whenever you're walking down the main street from the parade in the day. Like, It moved me to tears that first year.
It was. I mean, you know, and it was the same last year. I've been at Pride since it started each year. I was privileged to play a little part emceeing in it last year, and I'm going to be in the cottage performing this year. So we're going to have a bit of crack this year.
You did a great job at my day out.
Thank you very much, Nina. And in fact, I would know, is this the one downside is I'm with my colleagues in the Letterkenny Ukulele Orchestra. We're planning a set for the cottage Saturday night, and it's going to be a good one, I think, folks.
It is.
We're putting a lot of thought into the playlist, shall we say.
Oh, that's great.
In fact, we've put more thought into this playlist than we've put into any other for the past year or two.
Oh,
but
that's amazing.
It's going to be great.
Cottage might be the place to be on Saturday then.
No, I would not in any way abuse my position being the cottage on Saturday.
Nah.
I would no way use my position to unfairly promote the thing I happen to be involved in. But it'll be interesting, absolutely. But I mean, you know, but speaking of the Saturday night, I must be honest, I was reading through the brochure, and I'm thinking, oh my God, are we going to get anyone? Because there is so, literally, so much happening on the Saturday night. I mean, you've got choices. You can be, what, five different venues?
Five different venues, over 20 national and international artists, performers, bands, comedy, something for everyone.
We broke them up into different areas because it's like almost different genres.
Yeah.
And that was the way. So everybody's got their local pub as well, or their local venue that they want to go to. So we're trying to, like, accommodate the younger ones, the older ones, people who like going to the cottage, people who like going to McGinley's, people like going to the brewery and the orchard. So it's just trying to, like, keep everybody happy.
And you have voodoo as well, haven't you?
And voodoo as well. Mickey Joe Hart's headlining in there. Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, when we're finished, I'm not sure, am I going to stay in the cottage? Am I going to see Tanya McCall, who is amazing?
She's great. A
lot of time for Tanya.
Yeah.
Or am I going to go back over to see Moya again? We'll see. We'll certainly have a great night.
I know you're very divided, aren't you?
We also have the Eurovision legend Mickey Joe Hart playing in Voodoo.
Absolutely,
so it's another one.
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah, and that is great to have that to have that level of choice. Caller just asking, would you ever consider doing a dry Pride that would be alcohol-free, would make the event about identity and not the alcohol-fueled crack?
We actually have a lot of events on this year that are alcohol-free. Yeah. Especially we have a teen disco in partnership with Breakout, which is part of the Donegal Youth Service. We have that on the Friday evening at 8 p.m. in the community centre, and that's geared towards younger LGBTQ plus members, and it's an alcohol-free event. Alcohol-free events are on Thursday as well, all day. We have Pride Art Day in the community centre. We have a play on in the theatre at 8 o'clock. It's called Retardant. That's about a young LGBTQ plus member who's experiencing their identity and going through that experience in Belfast, like you mentioned earlier. And that is a monologue by Isaac Quinn, and that shouldn't be one to be missed either. There's also a trans image, trans festival on in the RCC on the Thursday as well, which would be an alcohol-free event. And that's not one to be missed. There's six shorts in that, and it explores the kind of the troubles and the struggles that young trans people have in their lives. And I think that'll be a powerful one.
And I suppose too, I mean, obviously you've got gigs going on in bars, so I mean, whatever is going on McGinley's with the Orchard, you've got the Cottage, Voodoo, whatever. I mean, you know, they
brewery,
are licensed
yeah.
premises. The brewery, they're licensed premises. They make their living by selling drinks, so that's what they do. Just got a message in, best wishes to all in Letterkenny County Pride. Fantastic to see equal human rights being supported, and that comes from Conor Micheál Colm McGlaugh Aspic in West Donegal. So Micheál, thank you very much indeed for that. So it all kicks off on Thursday. The brochure is online. I've not seen it.
We have one here for you.
Oh, lovely. I've just been accessing online. I haven't seen a printed one, but I mean, it's so excellent. So the brochure's knocking about, and it's a very, and it's great to see actually that it is becoming this this bigger and bigger and bigger event every year. And
we also have these beautiful posters as well.
That's lovely.
I know your viewers can't see, but it's off the cathedral.
They can. No, sorry. If you just if you turn it around, we can see it perfectly. Yeah, because you are on camera, guys. So that's a very nice one, actually.
It's created by a lovely lady called Manuela, and it contains lots of the kind of key places in Letterkenny. We have all of our sponsors on that, the cathedral, theatre, the RCC. And it's just kind of
That is an excellent poster. That is brilliant. I'm going to.
We're leaving one here for you.
Excellent. Well, that's grand. It'll go on the wall, and I'll have it robbed on Sunday morning. Absolutely, no doubt about that. Owen Brown and Candice Devine, listen, all the best with it. Really looking forward to Pride this weekend. Cottage Saturday night, 8:25.
Family fun day on Saturday as well. The theatre, 1 p.m.
Absolutely,
that's the main.
And that sort of hour and a half, 2 hours before the parade as well, outside the theatre, is really important between the fashion shows and the bit of crack and the stalls and everything else.
Yeah. Food stalls, crafts, merchandise, face painting. Mickey Joe Hart's also playing at that. So,
very good.
Not one to be missed.
Absolutely. Owen, Candice, thank you very much indeed. And we look forward to a very colourful and hopefully a nice warm drive weekend.
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now I'm joined by Megan Slough, whose mother Maureen passed away in an assisted suicide centre in Switzerland. However, the manner in which Megan found out about her mother's fate is, to say the least, distressing. Megan, good morning.
Good morning.
Megan, most people would assume that in a situation like that, you would have a conversation with your loved one, you would know your loved one's plans, the family would have had conversations, would have prepared. Nothing in your case could be further from that.
Well, no, because in my case, it was, in how I see it, glorified suicide done sneakily, and their verification process clearly isn't. It's woeful, because like that, no, I was unaware. When I found out my mother was dead, I found out through a WhatsApp message on a number that if you Google comes up as a scam number, because it's not even registered to Pegasus. It's not even someone who works in Pegasus. It was a volunteer who messaged me and then blocked me.
And Pegasus is the name of the clinic in Switzerland. We know there are a number there that help people who are terminally ill to see out their last days, if that's their choice. However, you believe that, to say the least, there are gaps in the level of scrutiny and the level of looking into...
My mother wasn't terminally ill. And I'm aware there's places that will do it, but terminally ill are sick. I'm aware that people are writing online, I don't use Facebook, that oh, people have a right to go, then you're saying people have a right to commit suicide, which is not something we should be normalising. Certainly not.
Your belief is that in your mother's case, she did have IBS, which is something that many, many people
IBS.
Live with.
She suffered with UTIs. She had, medical issues, to say the least. Well, she was not terminally ill, no.
You believe she had mental health issues that may have been to the fore here?
She was in a vulnerable place. She lost her two sisters in the last 3 years, our two little sisters in their 40s, one of them to suicide and one of them to the after effects of suicide. So my mum was very much hurting, on the inside and the out. She was going through a very hard time.
Do questions need to be asked about the supports that were available to her here at home? Because there perhaps is an argument, if she got the supports here from the mental health services, from the HSC, she wouldn't have started thinking about going to
Switzerland. As our next of kin and our only child, I tried to have the police sign her in, because I was actually, there was about 3 weeks before she had actually done it. I was a bit worried about her, the way she was talking. I had high premises. I was 9 months pregnant, so there wasn't a hell of a lot I could do. So I had got in touch with some family and friends and said I was worried. And then I rang the police and asked their advice. I said, what do I do? Because when she had tried to commit suicide last year, I tried to have her signed in from Cavan Hospital. And they had told me, but she said she's fine. I said, well, she might be telling you she's fine, but look what she's in for. An overdose, so she's not fine. And they just sent her home.
She then told you she was going on holiday to Lithuania. Did you at that point have any concerns?
No, because she didn't tell me personally she was going to Lithuania. She told a handful of people. But with the way me and my man's relationship was, I'm in Dublin, she's in Cavan, so we were on video chat more than anything. I could ring my man tomorrow, she'd be in Galway, and I can ring her next week and she could be in Cork and Shannon. She was always on a little getaway.
So it wasn't anything new to you?
As far as I knew, she was at home on Tuesday when I was talking to her. And it was only Wednesday night. I was given possibly 18 hours to try and stop what I was told was going to happen. But I didn't believe it, because when her friend had messaged me Wednesday night and said, can you talk? And I was feeding the baby and I said, can you text me? And her friend said, I was sworn to secrecy, but you've a right to know your man's in Switzerland for assisted suicide. And I thought, what allowed to be? She can't just go and do that without telling somebody. Like you said, surely family or friends or someone should have known something. So in my case now, I was completely in the dark. So when he messaged me that, I rang my dad straight away. And I asked my dad to ring her, and he did. And he rang me back and he said, look, your mum had no plans on coming home, but I'm after having a chat with her about how we're going to get her help for the pains in her back and her stomach when I get home, when she gets home, and say a prayer for your mummy tonight and she'll be home to you tomorrow. So that evening I texted her as normal first. I said to her, hey, what day do you want to come see the kids next week? Because at this point, I only have a 2-week-old baby.
Yeah.
And I had said to her, the kids have a present here for you, now to let her know, kind of get under her skin, because I didn't want to bring up the topic of where she was. I was so scared to say to her, mum, are you there to die? I wasn't ready to have that conversation. So she had said to me, I'm after finding a new medication in the UK that might work for me back. But the only thing is, I have to get it posted up north. And I had said, yeah, sure, we can rent a post box in the north and get it there.
Yeah.
And she said, it's expensive, but worth that. And I said, you're worth it, ma'am. And that was kind of our last chat. And then Thursday, it was 12 o'clock Thursday, I was in my hall with the baby walking up, and I looked down at my phone and it was a mad number. And it read out the message from Pegasus just saying, your mum asked us to reach out to you directly to let you know that she opened her IV cannula at 14:03. And I obviously start responding crazily. I was like, who are you? Where's my mum? What do you mean? Who allowed this? Where's the medical reports? What's going on? The number then blocked me. So my partner had to message them and say, like, yeah, they're blocking someone who just found out their mother died through PEC. And the person replied, I'm just a volunteer. You need to talk to Pegasus yourself. So that was a bit of a kick in the throat as well, you know.
One of the things we have been, one of the things we've been told about these centres, Pegasus is one, Dignitas is the one that probably gained most notoriety at the start of this process some years ago. But one of the things we were always told is that, number one, there'd be very comprehensive psychological help available for anyone who was thinking through this. There'd be checks put in place and balances put in place to make sure that there were conversations with next of kin, that everyone was happy with the situation, that there was a medical reason for it. It would seem in this instance none of those checks and balances came
to
pass.
They said they got a letter off me. I wrote no letter. They said they verified my letter through an email address, which is not my email address. So there's another fault in their system, because then I didn't get the next steps of what me as the next of kin was to do, because they were emailing, and now my dead mother's false email address. So I had to Google Swiss funeral homes, searching for my mother's ashes, because I was told I could be waiting up to 6 weeks or more, and if I was waiting any longer, I had to ring Switzerland and sort it out myself. So then I got onto the Irish embassy, explained to them what happened there. They were very helpful. They got her home to me within 2 weeks. What were you doing with her for 6 or more weeks?
Had the Irish embassy had similar experiences with this in the past?
No, your woman said to me, this is a first for me. And she said she's dealt, like, they hear of a lot of suicides weekly. She said, but this is the first case like this I've ever heard or dealt with.
It raises questions about the mental capacity of the patient they're dealing with. It's clear from what you're saying that your mother was not in a good place psychologically, and that your mother did not give the full truth to the people she spoke to in Switzerland. She wasn't forthcoming with the correct information. But someone in that vulnerable position, questions have to be asked. I mean, and I'm sorry to say this so bluntly, but can someone in the position your mother was in be trusted, and should they be trusted?
To make them decisions? No. And like that, when she was over there, they don't, they're a non-profit organisation. They don't, so, for example, they do their tests on you and they decide you don't qualify for assisted suicide. They will still keep 1,800. And then even if you decide you want to walk out the door, they will still keep 1,800. Now, if a vulnerable person, because on their website it says, we will assist you, any person in dying, as long as they're over 18, fully healthy and mentally well. That's glorified suicide. What fully healthy person in their right sound of mind wants to just kill themselves?
Even though we're told the purpose of these centres is for people who are specifically and categorically terminally ill and are ending the pain because they can no longer live with it. That
not
would seem to
Pegasus,
fly in the face of that.
That's not their quote.
Yeah.
That's not Pegasus' quote. Pegasus' quote is, you can be healthy and you have to be of sound mind.
There obviously needs to be some change to the law, or at the very least a review of the law in Switzerland that's allowing this to happen.
You have every right to go in there and get assisted suicide. You don't have to have anything wrong with you for Pegasus. And like that, sent me mother home to me like a parcel with a tracking number.
And that was after the intervention of the embassy. You've also said that you're still waiting on a death cert even now.
I am, yeah. So this isn't just a one-day thing. This is, my mum's gone now a good couple of weeks, and it's still every day is a battle and a question. I don't know where our passport is. She sent her bank card home and a postcard and said, cut up me bank card. Now, why didn't she cut it up herself over there? That's another weird one. So where's our passport? Where's our belongings? Where's our bag?
And presumably the fact that you don't have a passport, you don't have a death cert, that's going to have severe implications for you and your family when looking at handling your mother's estate, processing a will if there
is
one.
Well, I have our UK passport. My mum's a dual citizen.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky in the case that I do have one. But where is our other passport? Where's our belongings? And like you said, I can't get a start on anything or even try without having our death cert. So everything has just been...
And
I don't know.
Yeah, and it's difficult enough. Yeah, and it's difficult enough to get into things like wills and estates and all that, and cancelling bank accounts. And there's so much to be done. To do that at the best of times is hard. To do it under your circumstances, where this is the background, and you have so little information about what happened, it must be doubly difficult.
It is, because on top of all that, I have two beautiful children that I have to keep a brave face on every day for. Like, I have a new baby and a beautiful little boy, and like that, the situation is so tough on me.
Yeah.
A place like this shouldn't be allowed to do this to families. It's so messy afterwards that, they have a lot of their rules and regulations they need to look at, especially their verification process.
Megan, it's a very sobering story, and all I can say is I know that our listeners are thinking of you, and we wish you well into the future, and we obviously give our condolences on your mum's death and to the rest of the family as well. All we can say is hang on in there, look after your children, and most importantly, look after yourself, Megan. But for now, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Before we go any further, I just want to mention the Highland Radio Mega Summer Draw. What would you do with €20,000 in cash? Buy a ticket today for Highland Radio's Mega Summer Draw, and you could have five chances to win big. Every Friday from August 15th to September 5th, we'll be giving away €2,500 in cash. And then on Friday the 5th of September, on the 9th till noon show, we'll be drawing a ticket where one lucky person will win €10,000. To buy a ticket, simply go to the highlandradio.com website, click on the draw link. You can get one ticket for €15 or five tickets for €50. Don't miss out on your chance to win big with Highland Radio this summer. Now, we'll all have heard the story over the past 24 hours plus about the attack on a priest in County Down. He remains in a serious but stable condition in hospital after being subjected to a brutal attack in his church yesterday. Meanwhile, the PSNI have arrested a man in his 30s after a man was found dead in a house in Downpatrick in County Down yesterday. Now, the PSNI say they are separate but linked attacks. We're going to go to Colin McGrath, who's an SDLP MLA for that area. Colin, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Colin, you know the families involved here, and obviously we're limited in what we can say in terms of this being an ongoing investigation. But I'm sure, and it's something of a cliche in cases like that, but I mean, you know, all you can say is that the local community around about Downpatrick must be stunned at what's happened over the past 24 hours.
Absolutely, and I think that's just the correct term. Yesterday, people were stunned what had happened, both by the fact that there was the murder that took place, but also the fact that the priest was attacked in the church in the sacristy, and the fact that that was just before Mass. For Father Murray, it was his last Mass before retirement, and we certainly want to take the opportunity to wish him the swiftest of recovery, that he is able to enjoy that retirement. And I'm also acutely aware that there's a family within the community at the moment that is grieving over the loss of their father and son, and that this will be a very difficult time for that family as well. So for both of those things, the news kind of was slipping out slowly as the day progressed, that one event took place and then the other event came to light. And as the PSNI say, they are separate incidents but are linked.
Yeah.
And as that information came to light, people were just in a state of disbelief. So the town does need to rally around and support each other through this, as there are so many people that are connected and affected by what took place.
And as we understand it, the man who approached Canon Murray in the sacristy of the church before what was to have been his last Mass before retirement actually asked Canon Murray to hear his confession.
That's as we understand, and obviously what took place in terms of the conversation there and the actions has led to Father Murray ending up in hospital But as I say, we're somewhat restricted in what we want to suggest, in public. But we just sort of definitely feel for all of the families impacted. You know, there's Father Murray's family are impacted, the family of the deceased member, and the family of the person that carried out some of the incidents. So, you know, that sort of ripple across a small town has a big impact. It will take people time to digest what took place. And I think that there are some wider conversations that need to follow from this. And I think not least of clergy right across the island of Ireland that are often working with people that are in very precarious situations, often isolated when they're working with them. So, you know, there are questions that rise there. I think there are wider conversations about our mental health provision within our community. And, you know, there's obviously for people's safety response times from various agencies as well. So there's a lot to digest from what has taken place. But at the centre of it is the priest, Father Murray, that's recovering, hopefully, and also a family that are grieving the loss of their loved one.
And obviously this is an investigation that the PSNI are going to have to approach with great delicacy and care, because as you say, there are potential mental health implications in this, and that certainly is an element we would assume in the investigation and in the interviews and discussions that are to come.
Absolutely, and I think there are wider conversations that we need to have at Stormont, not specific to this, but wider, where we look at the impact upon the justice system by those that are suffering from ill mental health, because there are difficulties in securing the right treatments at the right place at the right time. And I know that some work has begun in Stormont via our health committee, which I sit on, but I think that there are now numerous examples across the north where we have real life experiences where the system is letting people down, and we need to address that urgently.
And then finally, a prayer vigil was held in St Bridget's Church last night, and the attendance at that, a symbol of the love and respect in which Canon John Murray was held and is held.
Absolutely. And as I say, the fact that he's been with us for over a decade as our parish priest, and we're one of the sort of larger parishes within the Diocese of Down and Connor, it's a fairly high profile role amongst the diocese. And it was his last mass. He was going out to celebrate that and then move into retirement. And I think that just really made it all the worse that Father Murray had dedicated his life to working with our communities right across Down and Connor. And at the very last moment, on the very last mass that this happened, it just made it all the more difficult. And we certainly hope that he can recover and that he is able to face that retirement and enjoy it, because he certainly has earned and deserved it.
MLA Colin McGrath, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Colin.
That's the situation as it stands at the moment in Dunpatrick. Obviously, there'll be updates as they come to us over the course of the day and the week indeed on the news. Let's look at some of your comments, and we're coming very close now to the end of the programme. Don't forget, by the way, after the show, John Breslin is back in the hot seat around the northwest, and John's going to be with us from after midday until 2:30 this afternoon with the best of music and some chat as well. So that's coming up after this. Brendan Deveney is correct. A caller says we need to go back to the old home and away championship system. It was much more competitive with teams fighting for early survival. Caller says it's obvious that the public services in Donegal cannot take the overload yet, despite the county being the second largest refugee asylum destination in the county. We are seeing more IPAS centres being developed. Surely there are other counties who can take in people, as the facts show our services are under pressure from health to housing and education. Caller says a big thank you to Ciarán in Kelly's Diner on the Mountaintop. We dropped in for something to eat yesterday, not realising it was so close to closing time. Despite that, there being six of us, he looked after us very well. Nothing was an issue. Full credit to him. Always good to acknowledge good service. We were speaking earlier to Tina McLaughlin about school and education and preparing for school, and the issue of the toilet came up, and how handy it is to have toilets in the classroom. Now, one of our listeners takes somewhat a bit of exception to that, says the toilet in the classroom is very unfair because it lacks privacy. All the kids laugh when a child goes to the toilet because they can hear them. My daughter won't use the toilet until she gets home, which is not good for her. Could teachers not add a little sound that could be played in the toilet so others don't hear them use the facilities? With regards to infrastructure, Caller says one reason we have no bypass or no Bonaghy Bridge or Children's Hospital is we keep voting in Fine Gael and Fine Gael. Their incompetence and crisis mismanagement is their track record. There was a query that came in. I've heard that the temporary council offices in Buncrana are moving back to their old location in the refurbished property that now houses the wonderful Inishowen Innovation Centre. What concerns me is they're not going to accept any payments at all from the public anymore, so business rates, council tenants, rents, etc. can't be paid locally. If you've covered this already, but with the passing of the Finance Provision of Access to Cash Infrastructure Bill, how does any of this make sense? Well, we've had a response from Donegal County Council. It says, due to operational reasons, Donegal County Council plans to cease cash receiving facilities in its Buncrana office from Friday 1st of August. That was last Friday. However, payments can be made in person at any public services centre, the most local being our Carndonagh PSC, with the cash office open from 9 to half past 12 and 1 to 4 Monday to Friday. As part of the Council's efforts to continually improve customer service and our online services, Donegal County Council is introducing a new online payment system called mycoco.com. IE, and payments can be made online, and you can get more information on that on donegalcoco.ie, which is the council's own website. Connor says, there is a danger I want to warn you of waiting to happen in Maclay's Corner in Stranorter. When you're on the Stranorter side of the lights going to Letterkenny, you get green, you approach the island. The problem is you don't always get a green light arrow when you want to turn toward Letterkenny. It's so dangerous. Why can't they have a green arrow every time cars need to turn from the Lifford side of Stranorter going to Letterkenny? And I suppose what's really needed there is a little bit of time when all that can move is traffic coming from that Lifford direction toward Letterkenny. I know exactly the spot you're talking about, caller, and I can't say I disagree. Following up on the return deposit scheme, we have had 60 million euro claimed. Why is it now today the government doesn't have a return app set up? That way you can have an account of your own, be able to recycle a bottle or can at any outlet and load the credit to the app. It can then be used where and when you like. We can buy a bottle or can in any shop, yet we're restricted to a shop that we return the bottle or can to. By having an app, it means you can return one item that you have if you pass it in a machine and get your credit. More people would use it without a doubt if that were the case. And finally, before we go, please mention a family have donated tickets for Oasis for Saturday for the Hogan Stand. We have an online raffle for those tickets, €25 each, all proceeds to the Donegal Hospice. And that's happy to do so. Now, it's just gone 2 minutes to midday. Time for us to take our leave. As we say, John's up next around the northwest. Thank you so much to Shannon for taking your calls, and to Carlin as well for both taking your calls and producing the show and looking after me as always. Most importantly, thank you to our contributors, and thank you to you, our listeners. Michaela's back on the show tomorrow, but for myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a very good day.